which is 18-5124, United States versus Hamilton.
May I proceed, Your Honor? My name is Gary Udishin. I represent Mr. Hamilton, the appellant in this case. And what I really want to talk about in the time I have today is the district court giving an upward departure. I know there's a dispute over whether it's a departure or a variance. I'm going to
it's
call it a departure.
Dispute, isn't it?
It is the main issue. But I'm going to call it a departure. But essentially what the issue is the district court, whatever it was, went above the guideline range without giving any notice to the appellant or the government, and that is the real issue before the court. Essentially what you had here was a guideline fraud case with a guideline range of 37 to 46 months, level 21. The district court conducted a sentencing hearing, went all the way through the sentencing hearing, and preliminarily to the sentencing hearing, the pre-sentence report itself in the section about whether there's any basis for an upward departure or variance stated that the probation officer identified no basis for that. The government in their pre-sentencing submissions requested a sentence at the upper end of the guideline range. The defendant himself, through his attorney, filed documents and made arguments asking for a downward variance from the guidelines. The district court went through the sentencing hearing, heard from some victims of the offense, heard from the lawyers, heard from Mr. Hamilton, and nobody had any indication at all that the court was considering any sort of upward movement from the guidelines. It was And when you look at the paperwork,
well, counsel,
yes, sir.
You know, I presume that my colleagues, but we've read your briefs and things like this. And what I'm interested in first, do you agree that this is here on plain error?
There is no specific objection
so you
to
do
this. So I don't think I can contest that, Your Honor.
Okay, so we're here on a plain error review. Now, I can't find, on the basis of what you're saying happened at the district court, I read words a little bit differently than the departure and the variance that you're talking about. Now, what specifically, what law can you point me to that says the trial court could not do what was done in this case?
Well,
it
Your
makes
Honor,
it reversible error.
If it's a departure, then Rule 32A.
Well, let's just assume that you humor me and I'm saying it is not a departure. Where are you?
If it's not a departure, then what I would rely upon is the language in the Irizarry case that says that it would be inappropriate not to give notice, although Rule 32H doesn't specifically apply. On our first ground of error, it is dependent, our success on that ground of error is dependent upon the court concluding that this is a departure. So I understand what the court is saying is that if it's not a departure, mm-hmm. then under Irizarry and Rule 32H probably does not require the court to give notice if it is not a departure.
If it is a departure, is there a case that vindicates a plain error?
I haven't
reversal.
Your Honor, I haven't seen a case doing a plain error analysis on this particular issue. Now, I will say this particular issue, the idea of a district court doing an upward departure without any notice is an unusual issue, and there are not a lot of cases on it because I think it's an unusual case where a district judge would do that. Because the entire basis of the system is that the defendant and the government has an opportunity to fully respond to any considerations that the court is taking into effect. And so there aren't that many cases on the idea of when is it okay for the district court to go up from the guidelines without any notice. So the fact that we haven't found a particular case applying a plain error analysis on this, I think is not particularly unusual, since it's not a particularly usual type of situation. Now, if I could, what I really would like to address, though, is why it is an upward departure rather than an upward variance.
Yeah, because there, you know, there's language in the record that where there's words that suggest it might be a variance as well. So, you know, get me over the ambiguities in the record that would lead us to conclude it was a departure.
So there may be ambiguities in the record, because the nature of drawing a distinction between a departure and a variance is going to be full of ambiguities, because they overlap to such a great extent. And our position is that under the Irizarry case, what the Supreme Court said is departure is a term of art under the guidelines and refers only to non-guideline sentences imposed under the framework set out in the guidelines. So the key phrase there is the framework set out in the guidelines. So in determining whether or not this is a departure or a variance, the question is, did the district court assess its ultimate sentence using the framework set out in the guidelines? And there's a couple of indications. Now, I understand.
But wouldn't the court be looking at the guidelines under the 3553A balancing as well?
The court is going to always, Your Honor, be looking
right
at the guidelines.
Right. Why does that phrase lead us to departure land?
Because that's what the Supreme Court said in Irizarry. Since the Supreme Court, it is a difficult concept. I will be the first to concede that it is a difficult concept for a court to decide whether something is a departure or a variance, because there's so much overlap. And I think in Irizarry, the Supreme Court, because they were drawing a distinction as to when Rule 32H applied, attempted to give the court some guidance in determining when something is a departure as opposed to a variance.
But in this case, the trial court starts out after certain announcements saying, in applying the 3553A factors, we have those. Are you saying that, well, that lends itself to the ambiguity that Judge Timkovich is maybe talking about?
This is the problem with this. The 3553 factors are applied regardless of whether it's a variance or it's a departure. So that really doesn't answer the question. What answers the question here is what the trial court actually did. The trial court actually said that he was recalculating the guidelines, added three levels to the guidelines, raising it from an offense level of 21 to an offense level of 24, and then he stated a new guideline range of 51 to 60 months, and then made a determination that a sentence within the guideline range was sufficient.
Well, let me narrow it down a little closer, because in looking at the Irizarry case that you're talking about, quoting, it says a departure occurs when a court reaches a sentence above or below the recommended guideline range through application of chapters 4 and 5 of the sentencing guidelines. And it cites our Intencio case. And then it says a variance occurs when a court enhances or detracts from the recommended range through application of 3553A factors. Now, that's what the court I saw here ultimately said, that in applying all the 3553A factors, does that not lend itself maybe more to a variance than a departure? And if not, I want to hear that.
If the court had just talked about the 3553 factors and did not recalculate the guideline range, state a new range, and then make a determination that a sentence within the recalculated range was sufficient, then I would agree with your statement. But the court did specifically apply the guidelines, specifically applied the guidelines in coming to the ultimate decision. If this was a pure variance for purposes that, of the issue we're dealing with, if it was a pure variance, then what the court would have been expected to do is to do everything that they did concerning 3553, but simply stated the sentence, simply stated the court sentences you to 60 months, not recalculate the guideline range.
Then tell me exactly then what your remedy is that you're seeking from us today.
We're seeking a remand for a resentence.
Just resentence?
Yes, sir.
And the court's going to say, I'm sentencing you under variance 3553 only, and where are we?
Well, Your Honor, part of the government's argument is that we can't really show plain error because the court was going to do this anyway. The district judge made some comments that indicated however you want to characterize it, an inclination to give the appellant as harsh a sentence as he could. But I don't think it's fair to the district court for this court to say that the court would have given the same sentence regardless of whatever arguments the appellant made at sentencing against the concept of an upward departure.
Well, I've been taking a lot of your time, but that's what bothers me. How do you show me that this error is really a plain error that the trial court did when one side says, well, it could be a departure, well, it could be a variance, but the trial court, you know, like you say, went all over the place maybe. How is this a plain error?
Your Honor, I disagree slightly with the characterization.
Well, good.
Okay. Because I don't think it's a fair characterization to say that the trial court could have been doing either or, because the trial court specifically used the guideline framework in assessing the sentence, which is exactly what the Supreme Court said in Irizarry makes something into a departure rather than a variance. So for that reason, it's plain, because in our view, he plainly did an upward departure. Your Honor, I would like to say...
Confirm, on remand, the district court would have the authority to impose the same sentence.
The district court would have the authority legally to impose the same sentence. Now, we might have arguments about whether they followed the proper procedures, right, and did it correctly, but as long as they gave notice, and I would say notice has been given, right, and so I would agree that there is a way for the court to do that. Okay, if I could save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
You may. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, counsel.
Let's hear from the government.
Yes, Your Honor. My name is Kevin Leach. I'm an assistant United States attorney.
Please
from...
get closer to that microphone.
Yes,
counsel.
I'm an assistant United States attorney from the Northern District of Oklahoma, and I'm here for the United States. Your Honors, may it please the court, there are three aspects of the record in this case which demonstrate that what the district court did in sentencing Mr. Hamilton was a variance, not a departure. Those three aspects are, first, what the court said in writing, second, what the court said verbally, and third, the method by which the court imposed the sentence. And if I may, I'd like to speak briefly about each of those three aspects. The first aspect being what the court said in writing, because the court, both in the minutes of the hearing and in the written statement of reasons, which Judge Dowdell signed, stated that the sentence imposed was done as a variance. And the forms themselves gave the court an option of notating a departure. But what the court filled out in the paperwork was variance. And these documents are in the record for the court to consider. The statement of reasons is in the appellant's sealed appendix and states that the reasons for the variance were extreme conduct, the impact on the victims, and then at section 8 of the form, at page 105 and 106 of the appellee's sealed supplemental appendix, the court elaborated upon the reasons, and that elaboration basically recounted what the court had said verbally during the sentencing.
Counsel, can I just stop you there? I take it you're saying that the court actually used the word variance on multiple occasions.
Absolutely.
And I am anticipating your colleague's argument, which is that's fine in writing, that's form, but the substance actually was a departure. And I'm wondering if I can get you to directly address that argument, that what the court actually did in function was a departure.
Yes, Your Honor. And for that, we look to what the court said verbally, and that's the second part of the three aspects of the record that I touched upon. And in the course of sentencing, stating the sentence, the district court said it would vary upward and there would be a resulting variance guideline range. And then the method by which the court sentenced Mr. Hamilton tracked the 3553A factors, which is exactly what a variance entails. And we contrast.
Wouldn't he have done the same thing if it were a departure?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And the reason I don't believe so is that a departure is a concept embodied within the guidelines. They are provisions of the guidelines. And it used to be, years ago, before Booker, certainly, that the only means of getting outside of the guideline range was to have a departure. The provisions that the parties would find within the guidelines that might lift a defendant out of the supplied guideline range. But since Booker, the court has much more discretion and considers all of the factors under 3553A, which is exactly what happened in this case.
Well, can I again stop you here? I mean, I think your colleague's argument is here the range was recalculated, and that is a departure. Can I get you to respond to that?
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I believe that the reference to a new guideline range was simply a recognition that the guidelines, whether it is a departure or a variance, the guidelines are always a consideration for the district court to keep in mind. The guidelines always provide the backdrop for what's happening in the course of a sentencing. And I think the Supreme Court cases through the years have recognized that fact, that the guidelines are the starting point, and that the guidelines, to some extent, are always the metric. And if you get to the issue of substantive reasonableness of a sentence, if it's pursuant to a variance, then there is a means of comparing what a district court ultimately did, like in this case, by going upward three levels to a new guideline range, to the original guideline range. And so I don't think it's unusual for a district court to recalculate a range to have some sense of, well, how far am I moving from the original position? I don't think that means that the new sentence is a departure. Does that help?
No, thank you. Let me just ask you then a follow-up. I mean, how do we determine the difference between a variance and a departure in your understanding? I understand you want us to focus on the words, and I just want to put those aside a bit. I mean, functionally, how do we draw that line?
Your Honor, I think there are two aspects that the court can look at, especially in this sentencing record and this transcript. The first is, what did the district court not say? And the district court never spoke about a departure, never referred to a departure provision. Certainly, there's no specific departure provision that's raised in the argument here. And contrasting, the court said, I've considered the 3553A factors, which are the basis for a variance, and which I think the decisions of this court say that's the difference between the two concepts. And the district court walked through aspects of this man's crime, the way he committed the crime, the impact of the crime, the usage of the funds from the crime, his multiple lies, the length of time that the offense occurred, the possibility of restitution, the deterrent effect of a sentence upon generally and upon this defendant, the need for the protection of the public. These are all aspects of 3553A that the district court did touch upon and in some instances elaborated upon. And that, Your Honors, is the essence of a variance, the consideration of those 3553A factors, and especially when contrasted with no reference, no discussion of any departure provision under Chapter 4 or 5 of the sentencing guidelines. Your Honors, apart from those aspects of the record in terms of the variance and the departure distinction, the appellant has also touched upon the procedural reasonableness of the sentence and also the substantive reasonableness of the sentence. Much of that argument, however, also turns upon this issue of whether the sentence as imposed was given pursuant to notice. And as the Irizarry case itself says, the sentencing procedure is much more fluid since Booker, and that the aspects of sentencing that a defense attorney or a prosecutor need to anticipate in the course of a sentencing hearing are for the most part well understood. And I think that is reflected in this sentencing transcript. The parties understood the issues. The parties discussed the issues. The parties briefed the issues at length. Mr. Hamilton presented a very extensive motion for variance, submitted many letters to the court. Mr. Hamilton himself eloquently allocuted to the court at sentencing. And so in the consideration of plain error, Your Honors, there's nothing that's been indicated that would have been done differently or could have been done differently.
Was there an appeal waiver?
I'm sorry.
Was there an appeal waiver here?
There was an appellate waiver provision in the plea agreement, Your Honor, but we did not choose to enforce it or argue it here because we felt that the substance was better addressed. So we thought that arguably the appellant could say, well, the issue of what the sentence should be was raised, and that was the exception that was permitted under the plea agreement. Your Honors, if there are any other questions that I can answer on behalf of the United States, I'm happy to do so.
Thank you, Counsel. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Your Honors.
A couple minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of things. If it is not sentencing within the framework of the guidelines to say I find that the range should be 3 points higher, I find that the sentencing range should be 51 to 60 months, I find that the sentencing range is sufficient and I sentence you within that range. If that is not a sentence within the framework of the guidelines, I don't know what is. Because I don't, when the Supreme Court referred to that in the Isereri case, I think that's exactly what they were referring to.
If you'd gotten notice, what would you have done differently at sentencing?
Well, the argument that the defense lawyer made was for a downward departure or downward variance. That's a completely different argument than arguing to the court that the guidelines are sufficient, that there's nothing about the guidelines or about this case or this defendant that would justify going above the guidelines. It's a different argument. So the argument,
the argument would be that the guidelines is a ceiling, certainly, because you're asking for a downward departure.
I think that's one way to phrase it. But essentially, the argument, if I was the defense lawyer and the court had given me notice that he's contemplating an upward departure, the argument I would have made would be an argument that there is no reason to depart from the guidelines because the guidelines address every aspect of this case, similar to the argument we made in our grounds 2 and 3 concerning the procedural and substantive reasonableness of the sentence.
Well, you know, the court said, Mr. Hamilton, the government limited me to 5 years. I would have gone more.
Well, so the court, the district court, was obviously trying to send a message to this young man. And I don't know that this court should consider that necessarily be the final word on what the court would have done. It sends a message. It's designed to get his attention. So I would leave it at that. Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counsel. We appreciate the arguments well presented. The case shall be submitted. Counsel are excused.